Good evening. Thank you for joining us. Colin Powell called his autobiography My American Journey, and that it certainly was. He rose through the ranks after ROTC, becoming chairman of the Joint Chiefs and eventually Secretary of State, jobs never before held by a person of color.
We're going to get this thing over with quickly using the simple process of cut it off and kill it, and then we're going to get home as fast as we can. Thank you very much.
That was General Colin Powell, the warrior, concise, calm, lethal clarity.
If you're going to go into a conflict, overwhelm them, send in as many people as you possibly can. That was his doctrine.
And if that was all he was, Colin Powell lived a remarkable life, but he was more. And America was better for it.
Colin Powell made history in so many ways. He was the first black chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He was the first black national security advisor, and he was the first black secretary of state. Getting to those positions was harder because he was a black man. And I think everyone should appreciate that.
Tonight, leaders from around the world and here at home remembering Powell, who died due to complications from COVID-19, despite being fully vaccinated.
Colin Powell dedicated his extraordinary life to public service because he never stopped believing in America.
He was the epitome of what it means to be strong, but at the same time, so modest in terms of everything that he did and said. In a way that it was never about him, it was about the country.
Well, he's not only a dear friend and a patriot, one of our great military leaders and a man of overwhelming decency.
A spokesperson revealing Powell had been battling a rare blood cancer called multiple myeloma, as well as Parkinson's disease. Doctors say the blood cancer can weaken the immune system, making him more vulnerable. He had been scheduled for the booster shot right when he came down with COVID. Colin Luther Powell was born in 1937. His parents, Jamaican immigrants, the Bronx, New York, his home. Modest means nor the despair of discrimination would stop him. Instead, they fueled him. Powell's passion for the military started at City College, where he was a member of the ROTC. After graduating, he would serve two combat tours in Vietnam.
I think the Army really truly did shape Colin Powell. He liked being in uniform. He liked the way he looked. He liked the power and the authority that it gave him. He learned leadership there. He learned teamwork there. He learned so much there that got him through the rest of his life in the way that he got through it.
Powell would soon break through barriers, becoming a four-star general, serving under four presidents, Republican and Democrat. In 1991, overseeing the successful first Gulf War, when the U.S. ousted Iraqi President Saddam Hussein from Kuwait. His most controversial moment coming more than 10 years later, in 2003, as Secretary of State, during a speech to the U.N., Powell made the case for war, telling the world of Iraq's weapons of mass destruction.
The gravity of this moment is matched by the gravity of the threat that Iraq's weapons of mass destruction pose to the world.
Those weapons did not exist. The intelligence was flawed. Powell was delivering the message of the Bush administration, but he would take responsibility as the messenger, telling ABC News' Barbara Walters he felt terrible about the claims made in that speech.
Do you think this blot on your record will stay with you for the rest of your life?
Well, of course it will. It's a blot. I'm the one who presented it on behalf of the United Nations, United States, to the world, and it will always be part of my record.
How painful is that?
It was painful. It's painful now.
He was also respected on both sides of the aisle. A registered Republican, his focus on people rather than party led him to endorse then-Senator Barack Obama just 2 weeks before the 2008 election.
I think he is a transformational figure. He is a new generation coming into the world, onto the world stage, onto the American stage. And for that reason, I'll be voting for Senator Barack Obama.
President Obama releasing a statement writing, General Powell helped a generation of young people set their sights higher. He never denied the role that race played in his own life and in our society more broadly. But he also refused to accept that race would limit his dreams, and through his steady and principled leadership, helped pave the way for so many who would follow. Former President George W. Bush calling Powell a great public servant. Tonight, flags are flying half-staff paying tribute to Powell's life and legacy. Decorated warrior, distinguished diplomat, a good and decent man, husband, father, grandfather. Colin Powell didn't just break barriers, he built bridges. And not only did this child of immigrants live the American dream, he embodied it.
I like to talk about what he would think his lasting legacy is. He talked about that in his memoir and wanting to be a good soldier. Whenever you asked Colin Powell after he became Secretary of State whether he'd prefer to be called General or he'd prefer to be called Secretary, he'd always say, "Call me General because I'm a soldier at heart." And he was indeed a good soldier.
Earlier, I spoke to historian Leah Wright Regeer and former senior advisor to General Powell, Anita McBride. Colin Powell was a man of many firsts. What is his true legacy, you think, as a soldier, a military leader, and diplomat?
He is, in an essence, this kind of story of American democracy, of the promise of the American dream, even as he cautioned us that we shouldn't be so enthralled with the American dream that we let go of all of our understandings of what surrounds it, right? The reality of things like inequality. But I do think that he represents, essentially at the best, when we look at the best of his legacy, he does represent this story of what is possible in America.
Lee, if I may, we live in such divisive times. Have we seen the last of leaders like Colin Powell?
He's rare in that he was an individual that was willing to critique his party and critique his party loudly in a moment where he felt like his party needed it. And we know that there is a contested history behind Colin Powell's willingness to do that. When we look at the larger trajectory, I think, of Colin Powell's career and his career as a politician or as a political figure in these elite circles, particularly Republican circles, he's unique and essentially the last of a kind of breed of political figures that was willing to take his party to task and say, we haven't done enough and we need to do so much more.
Anita, I want to bring you into the conversation. You served as chief of staff for First Lady Laura Bush and worked for Colin Powell at the State Department. Take us behind the scenes. What was the secret to success, you think?
As a military man and then as the nation's top diplomat, he cared about the people who were working for him and with him. And people felt an incredible sense of loyalty to him because of that. He worked in a political environment, but he was not really interested in being a politician. But that doesn't mean that as a private citizen later in life, as Leah says, he would take on the party that he worked for.
And ladies, in our closing moments, a final thought from each of you. Leah, if you could engrave the tombstone of this great American man, what might you say?
Oh, gosh. Byron, you're hitting us with the hard questions. The really difficult question. You know, I think that I would say, here lies a complicated leader who gave his life for service. And I think it encapsulates, essentially, a legacy that is deeply mourned by people of all political stripes.
And Anita, we'll give you the last word.
Yeah.
What will you remember most about this man?
He loved his country. He served his country. He loved his family. He loved his friends. He was an optimist. He believed in the future of the country and of its people. And he tried his best in all the phases of his life to bring out the best in everyone. And that was a great example of a truly, truly great American.
Amen. Thanks to you both. Up next, the global supply chain crisis, what it means for American consumers.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
The global supply chain crisis has the potential to impact nearly everything we buy, and it's only getting worse. Today, a major retail association called on President Biden to consider all options, including use of the National Guard. For many anxious retailers, relief cannot come soon enough. Here's ABC's Kaylee Hartung.
This is just one of the best toys ever, ever, ever. Cub blocks. Classic.
For Minnesota toy store owner Amy Saldana.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Nothing is more fulfilling than receiving a fresh batch of toys. Her stockroom at Kitty Wampus is filled to the brim with boxes waiting to be opened.
This is inventory that I've taken delivery of earlier this year than normal. Now it's coming in at such a clip. Some of this also represents just a catch-up of inventory we've been waiting months for.
Amy is grateful for this shipment, but this local entrepreneur is now finding herself on the front lines of a global supply chain disruption, and she's concerned that inventory will soon run dry.
I'm going to call it right now. By December 1st, I will not have one Lego product in stock. So I'm already making plans for what is the product I'm going to put on our Lego wall. So I'm spending between 3 and 4 hours a day right now talking to vendors about where shipments are, what some alternate product I can get. Oh, God, we're short here.
With the holidays fast approaching, Amy's still waiting on 25% of her orders.
Where are the toys? When are they coming? Are they coming at all? It is a bit of a roller coaster.
She's not alone. Across the country, store owners, big and small, are also worried about their products from music stores.
It's very strange for us not being able to call up and ask for something and get it in a couple of days.
To shoe stores.
Many of the vendors that we're dealing with are telling us that it's because of shortages of supplies or labor shortages that they're not able to produce the merchandise as quickly as normal.
The growing backlog in the supply chain seems to be affecting everyone, and it started because of an unforeseen increase in consumer demand.
The people who have jobs, they have more money than ever. A lot of them pass their time by buying things, and that has meant increased demand at a time when the supply chain is failing.
Nearly 700 cargo ships are currently backed up at ports worldwide, like this one in California.
What is sitting in all these containers behind us?
Everything.
Everything you can imagine.
Toilet paper, your shirts, your shoes.
Your Peloton bike. Air computers.
Everything everybody's waiting for.
Because of the pandemic, factories are struggling to keep up. And with labor shortages at every step, from the ports to the truck drivers, there's little relief in sight.
Many U.S. companies do have huge manufacturing centers in China. So in some cases, some of those factories had to close down because of COVID protocol. So that really slowed down production. Then if you add in all of the transport difficulties, you really have a big mess.
Last week, President Biden issued new measures to help ease the strain.
This is across the board commitment to going to 24/7. This is a big first step in speeding up the movement of materials and goods through our supply chain.
Today, the American Apparel and Footwear Association called on President Biden to do more, urging the White House to consider a proposal to incentivize the use of National Guard and/or utilize naval ports to help unload cargo, drive trucks, provide chassis, and unlock port congestion.
Have any of you ever seen a shipping crisis like this?
No, not in our lifetime. No.
And Daniel, Michael, Ramon, and Frank are longshoremen at the twin ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach, where 40% of our nation's imports are received. They oversee the loading and unloading of the ships that dock there.
So quite simply, where is the breakdown?
The breakdown is in the supply chain in general. I mean, there's many pieces of the puzzle. First of all, we need space on our terminals. You need the truck drivers to be engaged. You need to have facilities available and open so that they can deliver the cargo to and return the equipment back. And more importantly, we need the rail.
How long have some of these containers been stacked up here?
I guarantee you there's containers on this dock right now that have been here 30, 60, 90, 6 months that are sitting on these docks throughout LA and Long Beach that no one's come to pick up.
And yet the ships keep coming. The port continues to break records, averaging around 900,000 containers per month, projecting 10.8 million this year, a 17% increase from 2020.
Those containers need to be moved someplace else to give some relief.
The longshoremen say they have 14,000 port workers in Southern California to move those shipments around the clock. But the problem is, to where?
As far as we're concerned, we're only a piece of the puzzle. We need the rest of the supply chain to work out their logistics to have this cargo moved.
At the Port of Long Beach, my colleague Martha Raddatz took to the waters.
There are more than 60 container ships anchored here waiting to unload. And those are just the ones you can see way out in the Pacific. There are dozens more.
Even once they make it into the port,
hello!
They sit and wait in this cargo campground.
You've been here for a month?
Yes.
Long time.
It's taking three times longer to clear vessels at the ports compared to before the pandemic. Whenever they're eventually cleared and the goods make it on land, some of the containers are emptied at shipping logistics distribution centers like this one.
They've come in and we're in the process of transloading those containers. So we get the goods off the truck, repalletize them to different retailer specs, and then we send them direct to the DCs and the stores.
But there's a shortage of truck drivers too.
The trucking industry, a lot of them have sought other opportunities in other sectors.
Which makes getting shipments into stores like Amy's even harder.
My husband has this saying, you know, I sleep like a baby, which is that I wake up every couple of hours screaming. So that kind of describes this year very well.
She's been in the toy store business for 15 years. Her expertise helped her see the writing on the wall.
We knew at the end of last year that there were severe supply chain disruptions. So in January, I ordered all my puzzles for the year, including Christmas puzzles, and my staff thought I was a little nutty, but I did that because I ran short last year.
That's really cute, little deer.
This year I took bigger risks with new products that I wasn't sure what they were gonna be like, and then I placed a lot of orders in June. They're hitting now up through November 15th, so there's a lot we still don't have.
What I'm doing now is pulling up my spreadsheet of orders that we're still waiting for. This year my spreadsheet is 127 lines long, and I'm not sure I'm going to see maybe 40% of this.
The global supply chain crisis is hitting smaller and medium-sized businesses in a completely different way. They're little players. They're little fish in a big pond. And if you look at what Walmart, Target, Home Depot have done, they've actually chartered their own ships. For small and medium-sized businesses, they're just telling their patrons, you have to be patient or we can help you find something else.
Happy Little Dinosaurs is a new one for us.
I'm shopping today for Christmas gifts because I'm afraid that there's going to be a shortage and I wanted to get ahead of the rush because I'm normally late.
The dinos are all the way at the top. There's always kind of that waiting game. Well, I want to wait till early December to see what my child's into at that time. This is not the year to play that game. If you want a toy that is Hot Wheels, Lego, Barbie, you need to get it as soon as possible.
Despite all the shipping uncertainties, Amy says she is finding a silver lining in the high demand.
I'm not worried about my financial future because, wow, are we having a huge year. If someone says to me something's not possible, do you know what I think internally? Challenge accepted. I will find the toys and I will bring them to my customers and make sure that they have a great holiday season.
And finally tonight, Colin Powell had 13 rules that he said helped guide his life. I'd encourage you to go online to read all of them, but we'll leave you with number 13. Perpetual optimism is a force multiplier. Amen. That's Nightline for this evening. Catch our full episodes on Hulu. We'll see you right back here at the same time tomorrow. Thanks for the company, America. Good night.